You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves and are a part of the Beautiful Game Network. It is Sunday, April 11th, 2021, a little over 1 week away from the ending of the first week of the Major League Soccer opening weekend for the 2021 season. And this episode will serve as our full comprehensive season preview of MLS in their 26th year of existence. We have a lot of things to talk about, but first let me bring in my co-host. First of all, Daniel Sperry.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? How's baseball going?
Baseball's great, dude. The Giants have won four in a row. We're six and something. But we took a series against the Padres, and then swept the very, very, very lowly Colorado Rockies. So things have been looking up at the start of the season for the Giants. But the Royals are actually semi-entertaining this year. Every single game they play, it's not like they'll probably lose, but at least you're watching like a 12-8 baseball game with a bunch of like bad bombs into the stands. I'm okay with that, but the Royals have been entertaining. Good? That's the question. But entertaining, yes. That's been nice to have two baseball teams that I pay attention to be good and entertaining.
Last baseball question, and then we'll end this, Dan. Nick Castellanos, are we standing for him?
Oh, hardcore. If you've listened to this pod over the years, we are Team Chaos. However, I have always been a fan of, like, talking crap and getting in people's faces and the little, like, the deuce face kind of a thing from Clint Dempsey. I am all about that kind of stuff. Give me the personality. He got hit by the pitch. They threw at him, and then the pitcher kneed him in the back as he slid into home plate, and then he flexed on him when he was safe, and then he had four Cardinals run at him for no reason, and then he got suspended. Stupidest thing. I'm all on the Nick Castellanos bandwagon. I wish he was a Giant. We were trying to get him in free agency a couple of years ago, but I'm all aboard his choo-choo train on this one.
And then my other co-host, who's very, very mad about me because apparently I'm responsible for NWSL chaos, Rachel Cricker.
You are. I mean, first off, Dan, that was like, we weren't even like 2 minutes into the show and we already got a chaos drop, so... Very nice. Very well done. Yeah, Matt like unleashed every ounce of chaos. That is Kristen Edmonds and Morgan Weaver on opening, quote unquote, opening day of the NWSL season. But Matt, guess whose varsity soccer team is 2-0?
Would it be your varsity soccer team?
It is my varsity soccer team. And listen, long story short, this, like, me and the other coaches, Rich and Jake, were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're 2-0, because our starting goalkeeper, who is a legit goalkeeper, not like a kid we just throw in net, had surgery on both of his knees a couple of weeks ago, and what went from a 1 to 2 week recovery time is now a 5 to 6 week recovery time, and we have had to throw kids in the goal, and they've done a really good job, and I'm just very proud because we're 2-0, and I don't think any of us ever expected it, but we're very excited about it. So,
you say that you're very proud, Rachel. I'm disappointed in you breaking down my contributions to the NWSL this weekend without bringing up one Trinity Rodman. But in any case, we'll move on from that.
I didn't watch the game, so.
Okay. In any case, listeners, we've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to start with our season preview from a table standpoint in terms of where the standings will go for the Supporter Shield and the two conferences and teams that make the playoffs and finish at the bottom. And then we'll be looking at individual awards. So, Dan, I will throw it to you first. And since Columbus Crew are the reigning MLS Cup champions, we will start with the Eastern Conference. Give me your top tier of Eastern Conference teams that will finish at the top of the conference this season.
So how far down do you want me to go? You want me to go 4, 3, 4?
Let's go four. Let's go four.
All right. So, well, because if you go four, all four would host, would be allowed to host a home game. So I think that works well. I'm going to take, so we'll go from bottom up from my four in the Eastern Conference. I'm going to take Toronto at fourth. I know, Chris, there's always some questions. But I really liked what I saw out of Toronto under Chris Armas. There was a little bit of some good pressing. I think they were in a really tough situation in the Fire with, against Leon in Mexico, in, with a lot of fans there. I mean, that was a loud, I know they were pumping in some extra crowd noise, but there's still a lot of fans there that'll, at that stadium. And I thought that that kind of, added to the atmosphere, added to the challenge that they went into and did and took care of in their first game under him, with no Alejandro Pozuelo to play as well. I think that Toronto team has a good shot at being up there. I just think that the upper echelon of the East is just very, very, very deep and very, very good. And so I have Toronto closely on the outside just because I think at some point the fact that they're not going to be able to go to Toronto for at least the foreseeable future and play their home games there, and they're going to be on the road. Like at some, we saw in the bubble and we saw in the last season in the shortened season after the bubble down in Orlando that the teams that weren't allowed to play at home, save Vancouver because they weren't very good anyways. But like Montreal and Toronto still struggled mentally. We heard Pierre Henry talk about it too. And so I think at some point that's going to take a toll on them, but I think they're still too good of a team to not be in that top four. And then in third, I have Orlando. I love Oscar Pereja and what he did with that team. I wish they would take a chill pill sometimes because they are really, really emotional and very over the top when they play. But that passion turns into a lot of interesting stuff. And good play as well. I'm intrigued to see what happens with Daryl DK. If Daryl DK never plays another game for Orlando, I still think they're a top team in the Eastern Conference. I genuinely think if they get Daryl DK back and he finishes out the season with them, with how he's playing in the championship right now, I believe there's a chance for Orlando to push for a top spot and maybe even into the Supporters Shield conversation towards the end of the season. I like what they've got going. It's a very strong back line. Gaiesi, their goalkeeper, is back. He's arguably one of the best goalkeepers in the league for me. And then the midfield is a lot of very experienced players that do a good job. So Toronto and Orlando go 4-3. And then the top two, I have Atlanta and Columbus. I have Atlanta in first just because I think I don't believe that there's a team that has a more talented starting 11 that they can put out than what Atlanta can. Whether or not it all comes together is another question. They do have a new coach. However, a lot of the players that they have a proven track record with that coach, and that coach has a very proven track record around South America. I would be shocked if he came and didn't do well at Atlanta with Gabby Hines. So I'll take Atlanta first. And Columbus, they just added so much talent, and I have them in second, the reigning champs. It's actually a higher finish than they did have in the regular season table last season. So from one through four, I have Atlanta first, Columbus second, Orlando third, and Toronto fourth.
Rachel.
So for the Eastern Conference, we kind of line up similarly a little bit. I have the Columbus Crew in first place because I think that they're going to build off of what they did last year, and they didn't really lose many people. So I think that definitely helps in Columbus's case to kind of repeat for that first place spot. I have the Philadelphia Union in second place. I still think Jim Curtin, very deserving of Coach of the Year. I think he's got a great group. Another team that really hasn't lost a lot of players. I think they're onto something over in Philly, but you know, of course the conversation is going to be, can they get over that hump if they do make it in the playoffs because they kind of got stuck a little bit last year. This is my one bold pick. Probably of the night, I'm going to put Nashville in third place. I like Gary Smith. I like the group. I think Walker Zimmerman was a great addition. He has no signs of slowing down. He is just absolutely, he's a really good player. I like The Costa Rican guy, his name is Randall Leal, right? I think he's really good, very solid for Nashville, and I think he's going to have an even bigger year than he did in 2020. And then for fourth place, like Dan, I have Orlando City SC. I just think that there's way too much talent on that team to not be in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to go. I would interchange Nashville and Orlando, if anything, but I still think both of them make the playoffs and in pretty high seeds. So
I'll go next. So I have Orlando in third for a lot of the similar reasons that you did, Dan. I have Columbus first overall, and I'll go ahead and say here that I have Columbus winning the Supporters Shield. They have no real area of immediate weakness, and the one area that I do have slight concern over is Harrison Afol, at 34, 35 years old now, being backed up by Marlon Harrison. But other than that, this team, in terms of talent and their starting 11 and their style of play, is, you know, I would argue at worst top three in MLS. And in terms of their, like, two-man depth roster at every single other position, I think they're at the best of any team in Major League Soccer. So I have them completely wrecking what I think will be a weaker Eastern Conference this year, and in that, winning the Supporters Shield. And then kind of the other two that I have, Dan, I have Atlanta down in fourth. I agree with you that I think this is probably, other than maybe LAFC, the most talented group that you actually have in MLS. I think it's the most talented group other than Columbus in the Eastern Conference. However, I do have questions about just a first-year head coach in Major League Soccer getting used to MLS. I think Joseph Martinez will be back to his old self, but we kind of see that it always takes, it's the second year after the ACL injury that you kind of get back to, you know, where your peak is actually is. So is he, you know, 90%, not Joseph Martinez at 90% is still one of the best strikers in Major League Soccer. He is not I can single-handedly put this team in the playoffs no matter how bad they are. And so I do think there will be some gelling, both from a tactical side, from the new players that come in, and kind of all of those pieces working together with a lot of starters getting used to Major League Soccer for the first time, or a normal year in MLS getting used to that regularly. And so I think that is an area of concern for me that will have me bear in mind. We're talking about the difference between first and fourth in the Eastern Conference is going to be like 10 points at the absolute most. So that's why I have Atlanta in fourth. I have New England Revolution finishing second overall. I think this year is going to be the year of revenge of Bruce Arena. He's come in and had a say in all three of the designated player signings that he's had, and I think he's sneakily built out some depth with some other inside MLS acquisitions that we always seem to underestimate until he's hoisting MLS Cup at the end of the season. So I think just the collective of what Columbus has been able to achieve in the last year under Caleb Porter, they get the Supporters Shield, you know, in Bruce, we trust in the case of them getting a second. Orlando, for the same reasons that you said, Dan, and then also the concerns you had about Atlanta are the reasons that I have them in fourth. With that, Rachel, let us head over to the Western Conference, and the top four will be to you.
Surprisingly, I don't have the Seattle Sounders at number one. I know, shocking, breaking news. Thank you, Dan, for the slow clap. but I them making the playoffs, just not here in the top four. LAFC is my top team. I think they're going to win the Supporters Shield. I have a lot of individual accolades coming up for LAFC that actually have not much to do with Carlos Vela, surprisingly. I'm going to put Sporting Kansas City at number two. I mean, a team that really, if they lost anything, it was, you know, Matt Beisler was probably the most head-turning thing, and you know, he's getting up there in age. He wasn't a consistent starter last year, and he's going to, I think, a better fit right now for him in Austin instead of just kind of like sitting on the bench with Sporting Kansas City. So I think Sporting KC, Peter Vermees, take number two. And then I have, as much as it pains me to say, put the Portland Timbers in the top three. At number three, convincing in CCL, and I just think it's another team that really hasn't lost a lot of people. And I think I said this on the pod with Dan the other day, I really like Giovanni Severese. I think I said his name right. I hope I did. And I think he's done a really good job with the team. I forgot we were picking four teams, and not just three. So coming up on the fly here with a, fourth team, I'm going to, and I had them being put in the playoffs anyway, but, gonna pick the San Jose Earthquakes because this is probably the last year of Wando, and I think they're gonna go, I think they're gonna send him out with a bang. So we'll see.
Dan.
Oh, I do not have the San Jose Earthquakes that high up. I have my own rants about them, as you all are very familiar with. We will save them for another day. But like Rachel, I have LAFC and Sporting Kansas City at the top of the Western Conference. I have LAFC first, just overall supremely talented. I think, you know, when everybody's healthy and everything's clicking for them, they're the best team in the Western Conference. And I don't know how close that is. So I'll have them at first. Sporting Kansas City, I have in second. I think that this one, I think the revamped back line will, be, a little bit, a breath of fresh air, in Sporting in Kansas City. I know Peter Vermes has talked about they are going to try and work on some newer, some new defensive, tactics, in terms of not like overall they're going to play defensively, but, some new, kind of playing points, for their center defenders, and stuff. So I think we'll be curious to see how the back line works together, and how the squad overall comes together. But I do think that they made some very good additions there. Bringing in Nicolas Isimat-Marin. He's a very physical, ball winning all over the place kind of a guy. They also have Andrew Fontas, who can play kind of the QB, pass, finder, back there. And, you know, I think a full season of Alan Pulido, we can talk about his accolades that'll come after a full season of him if he's healthy a little bit later. But I have those two up top. I go Minnesota third. I think that for me, in my opinion, I think like anything outside of the top two places, in the Western Conference are pretty much attainable if, even if you don't start strong. And a team like Minnesota, I think it's going to take a little while for some of their new signings to really gel, but I really, really, really like some of the new signings that they added. Ramon Avila, playing at striker, with, is going to, kind of light up, that attack, I think. And he's already got a whole lot of, rapport with, Bebelo Reynoso. And then they are expecting to add a young Argentine winger out on the left-hand side. And I think the, from his, exploits, the guy's got something like over 20, almost 30 goal actions and about 80, first division games, down in Argentina. I think that makes that attack really dangerous. So I have Minnesota third and then the Portland Timbers, rounding out my top four in the West. I think the Timbros, are a good team. I think they have a lot of talent. I think this is about the last year for them at some point. I have them in the playoffs. I think they are good. I think there's more fans to get in the stands too. It's just a hard place to go play. They will pick up points. I have Portland in fourth. We can talk about later why. I don't really believe in some of those other Western Conference teams to at least jump up to that home playoff game level in the standings.
I have LAFC first of all, overall, like both of you, for reasons that I don't need to reiterate. I then have the Portland Timbers, then Seattle Sounders, then Sporting Kansas City. Let me walk it through. I think like you, Dan, I'm curious to see what happens from a defensive standpoint from Sporting Kansas City, but I also think that that's going to take a little bit of time to gel. And so if I'm just pulling up, say, the 2019 Western Conference standings, you had LAFC first overall with 72 points. I do not think they'll get 72 points, but then if we look at the difference between second and fourth and even down into fifth in the Western Conference, it's 56, 53, 53, 51. So the difference, so I put kind of LAFC at the top of the class in the West, and then these three are grouped and are effectively interchangeably for me, and the difference between them, if it's like 2015, will be 5 points, which is basically one head-to-head win difference between these two teams, these three teams. excuse me, why I have Portland, then Seattle, and then Sporting Kansas City in that order is because at some point later this year, Sebastian Blanco is going to come back from his ACL injury. I think that will give the Portland Timbers a lift. And I think Jordan Morris rehab or not, if there is an opportunity and Seattle isn't at or near the top of the Western Conference, I don't think Garth Lagerwey is going to wait around and see whether or not this team figures out. And Seattle will have the financial gumption to add reinforcements in one way or another in the summer in ways that I don't think Portland will. And I think at this point, just with everything that Sporting Kansas City spent on, you know, they've made the moves for the bulk of their team. They're not waiting to see if things gel and then try and make a move in the summer. So for those reasons, I have, you know, by the, you know, a hairline razor edge is the difference between having Portland at 2, Seattle at 3, Sporting Kansas City at 3. But as I said before, all three are interchangeable, and I would not be shocked if any one of those three came up second in the Western Conference. With that, let's go to the bubble teams. Rachel, I will start with you in the Eastern Conference. Who are your last two teams in, and who are your first two teams out?
I have DC United sitting at 6th place. I like their new manager. I think he's going to bring in some different things. The Paul Areola injury definitely doesn't help, but I don't think it's super duper long term. So hopefully DC can, you know, figure something out, but I do think there's some depth there. In 7th place, squeaking in by the skin of their teeth, is Toronto FC, just because, you know, they have depth and they know what to do without Jozy Altidore, I guess is a good saying. Just because of how much he's been injured, they always have a backup plan for him. I'm curious to see what Chris Armas does with his first year there, how it goes. They looked pretty decent against Club Lyon in CCL in the first leg. Interested to see what happens in the second leg there. Not making the playoffs, big womp womp to Phil Neville and Inter Miami in his first year stateside coaching, his BFF's team. I think there's Inter Miami to me is a lot like the Orlando Pride of the NWSL. There are so many individually great players, but as a team, they don't mesh together. And there's a lot of big names and there's a lot of, you know, hype around the team. And then when it comes to actually playing club games, it just, I just don't think it's going to work out. I will say though, they did get a steal and I'm very angry about this still. And I'm still reeling from this. And let me just get on my soapbox for a second and say Seattle Sounders are really going to miss Kelvin Leardom. And I don't think they realize how much they're going to miss him. But anyway, Inter Miami got a steal with him. I just don't think there's enough there for them to make the playoffs. And then in 9th place, I like some of the new additions that they're making, but I'm putting New York City FC here. Although it is very cool to see Alfredo Morales, a U.S. men's national team player, coming home. So I just don't think that altogether it's quite there yet.
Dan, Eastern Conference bubble teams.
All right. In the Eastern Conference, my bubble teams. So we'll go. I have Philly chilling out in the 6th spot. I just don't know what we're going to see from them in terms of a creative playmaking setup. I don't think their team got much better than it was last year. If anything, it got a little worse, losing Mark McKenzie and Aronson, who were key pieces. And they didn't really replace, I said this in my season preview that I wrote about them, they didn't really replace, like for like, the players that they lost. So that means they're counting on their internal systems to step up. And I don't know if it's if Anthony Fontana is ready to step up and be that type of playmaker. I think Jacob Glessens could actually come in and do a good job, maybe not as good as Mark McKenzie, but I do think he could be up there. So I like Philly. I think they're a strong playoff team, but as I said, I think that upper echelon of the Eastern Conference is just so good that I think Philly just ends up taking a little bit of a step back this season. And CCL play will kind of get into that too. I don't think they are that deep of a team. Then at 7th, I have the Chicago Spiky Mountains. Hang on. Matt just like about jumped through his chair. Like what? I thought that this Chicago team, the last couple of years, their expected goals difference and their expected goals against difference was one of the highest in the league for the last two seasons. And yet, for some reason, they keep finding themselves at the bottom of the table. I'm not sure why or what it is, but I do like some of the moves that they made. I think over time, we saw them get better. And I think at striker, I think their Polish star man up top, who, you know, the one who was slamming shots of Malort in his intro video, which was so sick. If you know Chicago culture, I think that there is enough there, to put them in. I am very concerned about some of the teams that are your quote, regulars in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Some of the originals, some of the MLS originals, I am concerned about them. Which is why, at this point, even my first team out is Nashville. I think last year they were very good. They benefited from being very hot, and having teams that, were traditionally powerhouses not be good. And the fact that it was a very expanded playoffs, I think just kind of was the benefit for them. I like some of the additions that they made. We saw them start to get closer to it, but I think a lot of teams in that Eastern Conference got better, and I don't know if they really moved the needle compared to some of the others. So I'm going to have Nashville at seventh, and then eighth is where we start my run of originals that are sitting on the outside looking in, with Red Bull New York in eighth in the Western or the Eastern Conference. I'm not sold on that roster. I'm not sold on some of the additions that they've made. I don't know about this coach. Sure, you can press the crap out of people, but I'm very, very curious to see how this all actually works in MLS, and if they even have a roster to pull off what they want to, because that roster hasn't experienced a whole lot of influx of good new young talent. Granted, Frankie Amaya is a nice pickup. I don't think it moves the needle nearly enough for New York this time around, and I don't think that they were that good last year either.
So, Dan, in the spirit of Malort's, the official drink of tonight's the night you fight your dad. I guess tonight's the night I disagree with my Dan. So I guess just I question, outside of Barrick, I question where the goal scoring is coming from the Chicago Fire. And while I do think the defense is going to be better, I do think Johan Kapelhoff will have a better 2021 than he did in 2020. I wonder about. I wonder about the team's makeup of just it being such a young group that is relatively inexperienced in MLS with a head coach that is relatively experienced in MLS. And so unless they, you know, who knows what's been going on from a marketing standpoint, I think Chicago was one of the most screwed teams in MLS last year in terms of moving back into Soldier Field and kind of all the emotions around that and then not getting an actual crowd. So, I mean, are we getting, you know, are we getting Bridgeview, Illinois crowds in Soldier Field? I think that's going to be a huge hit. If they're at least, you know, getting most of the lower bowl full, I think that will create a better atmosphere than they ever had at Bridgeview for an extended period of time that actually helps them. So for those reasons, I have a lot of question marks in a way, Dan, that I do not have question marks about the sixth place team in my Eastern Conference, Nashville SC. Gary Smith knows this league. I'll admit that, you know, sixth or fifth is probably the ceiling that this team actually has. I'm still not entirely sold on what they've done from a DP standpoint, but we know this team's going to play hard. We know they're going to defend well, and we know if they get a goal, they're going to be able to see out the game and get a result having taken the first lead. So I have them in sixth. I'll admit I made this prediction and I'm writing this down where we don't know the resolution of the 4DP issue that Inter Miami is dealing with, but I have them in seventh, the final playoff team in the Eastern Conference. And I'll admit I'm entirely banking this on Gonzalo Higuain just putting up like 15 and 10 in ways that I don't know that any other teams around them will have DP center forward pass him the ball and he will find ways to score goals. And I think that production on its own will be good enough. If you listen to Allocation Disorder, Sam Stasekol and Paul Tenorio's podcast through The Athletic and through Total Soccer Show, they kind of hinted at the possibility that like MLS could be looking at more than just financial and actual sporting penalties for the not Danny Mwanga. Who am I thinking of, Dan?
Blyce Matuidi.
Blyce Matuidi. Thank you very much. So the Blyce Matuidi situation, but like they've suggested of like there could be a sporting penalty that potentially includes a points deduction. So I'm going to put a big asterisk on this of assuming that Miami does not get a points deduction for 2021. My last team out in the Eastern Conference will be Philadelphia Union. I think Brendan Aaronson's departure hurts them. I think Mark McKenzie's departure hurts them. Do I do like Glesnick like you, Dan? However, I also think that just, you know, Alejandro Bedoya has been an absolute bulldog in the midfield, and he's 34, 35, and like one hamstring pull, and I don't know what that three-man midfield looks like. So I do think Philly takes a little bit of a step back, but they'll still be progressing towards something forward. And then the last team that I have, ninth in the Eastern Conference, will be New York City FC. Go check out any regular fan on NYCFC Twitter or the message boards and everything, and they've been clamoring for upgrading things. And Ronnie Dyla has been saying, and Ronnie Dyla has been basically saying, like, we don't have good enough players to actually compete. So, you know, one Maxi Morales injury, and I don't know how this team is going to be able to score goals. I still think they're going to be okay defensively, especially with James Sands there. We'll get to my thoughts on that. But I don't think this team, from a spending and a superstar and a big impact DP standpoint, is the same super club that it was aspiring to be 2 or 3 years ago. Let's move on to the Western Conference. Rachel, you're back from laundry, so why don't you tell us who's the going to make the playoffs and miss the playoffs in the Western Conference?
Okay. Yes, I am back from laundry. So in sixth place, might sound a little low, and I know it's shocking, but I have the Seattle Sounders. And I'm not going to go too crazy in depth here. I know, gasp, craziness. This is my chaos portion of the podcast. I just think that their defense has been shuffled around before, but this year is like just kind of crazy with it. I still think Javier Arriaga and, Yaimar Gomez Andrade are your two center backs. I am not fully convinced with Alex Roldan as the right back. I still stand on my soapbox and will die on the hill of Alex Roldan started a couple of games because Kelvin Leardom got hurt. Kelvin Leardom did nothing to lose his starting job. And if Kelvin Leardom was the starting right back at MLS Cup, maybe Columbus would have still won, but it wouldn't have been as bad as it was. And they let him walk, and I'm very surprised about that. And I think that's definitely going to hurt the team. This is kind of a little bit of a rebuilding year. It does kind of seem surprising because they still have Nico Lodero. They still have Raul Ruiz Diaz, Christian Roldan. Losing Jordan Morris is going to hurt. He was a big part of their offense last year, although him and Raul Ruiz Diaz kind of like split it up. Getting Freddy Montero is pretty cool. And from what I understand, he's been doing really well in preseason. But he's not Jordan Morris. So I think they're going to make the playoffs. The Seattle Sounders find a way to do it every single year. But I don't know if they're going to make a MLS Cup run. But yeah, Seattle Sounders make the playoffs, but they're going to be in sixth place. Right behind them, I've liked the progression of this team from the last couple years. It's a very slowly but surely thing, but I think Vancouver finally gets a playoff spot in 2021. I like the direction they're going. Mark Dos Santos seems like a really good coach. Our guy Ben Rigotti writes about them really well, and he always gives great updates about them. And just I was joking with him a couple weeks ago about this, but when he first started writing for us, it was the tone was very negative because the team wasn't doing great, but slowly but surely, you know, the team is getting better, making improvements, signing better players, and the tone of Ben's articles have become a little bit more positive. So I'm going to put Vancouver in the seventh spot. At 8 and 9, I'm going to put Real Salt Lake and FC Dallas. I don't think they make the playoffs this year. I think RSL, still kind of figuring out their ownership situation, are going to want to make a big leap from last year to this year, not just on the field, but off of the field as well. But I don't think they make the playoffs. I think they miss out a little bit. And FC Dallas, sorry, Luchi Gonzalez, but I'm putting them in ninth place.
Dan.
So Western Conference, good Lord. I've got, like Rachel, I have Seattle in sixth. I think that, there's a lot of turnover and a lot of missing pieces. At some point it is just the Nico Lodero and Raul Ruiz Diaz show. The question of can they both be healthy and on the field at the same time all season long that would lead me to maybe believe that they can get a home game, but I just don't see it there. So I have them at the sixth spot. I think as Matt said, I think at some point they'll do something and figure it out. But as many have seen, we've seen the storyline of the slow starting Seattle Sounders, very often. And I think that slow start will continue a lot longer, than they've had to deal with in the past. And I think, as while Matt said, they will do something. Yes. I don't know if that's going to be enough to move the needle to put them into a home playoff game. Seventh, I've got the Colorado Pids, up the Pids. I think the Pids will make the playoffs. I thought that there were a lot of things that I liked from that team. There's a lot of young players that were in some key spots last year that if they continue to take the step forward in some growth, I think you could see, a team that is really well put together. My X factor for them is Kellen Acosta. Is he the Kellen Acosta that we saw, again in that first friendly against Jamaica? Or is he the Kellen Acosta that we've seen where everyone is just like going yeesh, like constantly every single time he makes a pass? Sometimes that happens. And so what type of Kellen Acosta do they get? I think that's a significant factor on their season. I like to think he'll be good enough to get them into the postseason. Sitting in seventh, I have my San Jose Earthquakes just missing out on the playoffs. They were eighth last season. They were close to, I think they were eighth the season before in the Western Conference. And I think they'll be eighth again because I don't know that Matias Almeida's crazy crack the whip style of play works. I just don't think it works in an MLS type setup. There, if you go in and look at the Mexican seasons are split into, there's 18 teams in the Mexican and Liga MX is like the top division. So each team plays 17 games in that season and they do a little tournament. And then there's another 17 games after a break and then a tournament. And then they have their super champion and like the Liga MX or the Copa MX, all that kind of stuff. So in what the San Jose Earthquakes have done every single year is put together a really good 17 game campaign. But at some point that starts to trickle out. We saw that what happened in their 34 game season last time around. They had about 17 halfway decent games last season. I really like look at that team and I say, that's about as good as they're going to be able to put together. So I just don't think putting together a 17 game stretch where you win 9-10 of them, and draw 3 or 4 of them is going to be good enough, to offset the potential issues that they have. And they struggled against the Oakland Roots in a friendly. No one knows what happened in their friendly against the Sacramento Republic. Neither team agreed to tweet out a score, so that was behind closed doors. Those are the only two friendlies that they've played this entire season, and they did their whole off-season training camp down in Santa Barbara. I just don't think that they prepare themselves enough for the regular season. They start slow and get themselves into a massive hole that they can never get out of, until they go on their run and then they get tired from going on their run and they can't sustain it anymore. So I just don't believe that the Quakes and their, Matias Almeida, the system can do it. There's my Quakes rant. That's about as brief as it's going to be, on where they're going to be. But then I got Houston actually ninth. I like Tab Ramos. I like a lot of the players on this Houston Dynamo team. I think, Albert Elise leaving in the middle of them being in a playoff position, really stuck them in a hard place and contributed to their downfall, which was eventually towards the very, very bottom of the Western Conference. But I think they're a lot better team than that'll let off. I think Tab Ramos is a good coach. And I think, that they will, they've done some good stuff in trying to fill those holes. And I'm really looking forward to a continued outbreak from Memo Rodriguez. I really like him as a homegrown player and I think he's got a lot of talent. So I'll have them in ninth. I don't have them in the playoffs, but I think they're a good squad.
I have Minnesota United finishing sixth. I know that might come as a little bit of shock to people. I think they papered over the cracks of not having Icopara last year and what ended up happening in goal. I just question the talent that they're going to have, especially because we've kind of, there's been some rumblings out kind of suggesting that Ike's dealing with a similar thing and he might be done, but at the very least, he's not going to be available for selection to start the season based on his injury track record. That doesn't bode well for the Minnesota backline. I think the absence, the departure of Kevin Molino is really going to hurt this team offensively. And while I think Reynoso is probably one of the top five, certainly one of the top seven number 10s that you have in MLS, they don't have a center forward again. And this seems to be just something that Adrian Heath cycles through, where they come in and get somebody, they spend big money to acquire that person, and then 6-9 months later, he's kind of done with them. And so there's been no indication for me that they're going to do it, you know, in the first transfer window. And okay, let's look forward to the summer. If I were to make a comparison, you know, let's say the Seattle Sounders, who, as I mentioned previously, I have third. If nothing else, the Sounders have Ladero, Chuauro, Ruiz Diaz. The Loons have Reynoso to a bunch of potential question marks or guys being played out of position or, you know, bit part wingers that they actually have. And so though I have concerns on both ends of the field for Minnesota in ways that I do not for any of the other in at a magnitude and in a potential question mark in ways I do not have of any of the teams I have finishing above them. So I have them sixth unless they really make a big splash in the summer. Number seventh, Dan, I have the San Jose Earthquakes. Similar like you, I like what some of they're doing. I still question whether or not Almeida's approach and man-marking system can actually work on the whole for an entire season and then have a team on the upswing for the start of the playoffs. But I think if nothing else, like the collective spiritual coming togetherness of the Goonies and of Wando's final season will be enough to say, like, if nothing else, we have to get this guy back to the playoffs and maybe give him a chance to where he doesn't get Tim Melia'd at the end of it in stoppage time. So I have them as the last team in. First team out, I have as the LA Galaxy. I actually really like the recent move they made, signing Kevin Cabral from France as a designated player. Jovan Karavsky has kind of quietly been doing a really good job scouting France and a couple of other European leagues. And the other big acquisition that they had back at the beginning of Karavsky kind of taking on this task within the organization was signing Roman Alessandrini, who, yes, things didn't end well because of the injuries that he had, but they got the right guy, a right character guy, and a guy who fit in from a style of play standpoint. Will Cabral replaced what likely will be missing with Christian Pavone, not signing with the team, who's still going through legal issues due to a rape allegation. And, you know, right now the LA Galaxy have three DPs, albeit Cabral is a young DP. That is a concern for me. But if nothing else, I've got two guys on the wing and then potentially Victor Vasquez as like LA Galaxy El Seno providing service to Chicharito. So if nothing else, Cheech is going to get an absolute buffet of service right now that should improve them offensively. I like most of the moves that they've done defensively. My big concern is in the midfield. Jonathan Dos Santos is going to be the tempo center. He's going to be the captain of this team. He's going to start out the attack, but I don't see a runner in here. I don't see a guy who's going to do defensive actions. Is that something that the Jet could possibly do? Yes. Is that something he's best suited at? No. Sasha Kljestan doing that, you know, with his, you know, 34, 35-year-old legs, I have concerns about. And I think that's going to be the crux of what's going to hurt them both offensively, defensively. From the middle out, they're going to be undone. So improved team, improved from a goal production from Chicharito. Still, Greg Vanney and Dennis DeClose have been saying this is a 2 to 3 year project that they're working on. They're currently in year one. And then last team that I have is FC Dallas. You know, they've done a good job from a financial standpoint of selling some of their players. I think that we could see a further, not a fire sale, but certainly a yard sale this summer. If Paxton Pomegol gets back to healthy and then has a good run of form, I think we could see him go. And that'll be good for the club in the long run. That'll be good financially. That will be bad from a next man up talent depletion standpoint for Luchy Gonzalez come August, September, October. And then with that, let's go to the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Dan, I'll throw it to you. Who are the last two teams that you have? And then go ahead and reiterate your Supporter Shield and Wooden Spoon winners for 2021.
Your last two for each conference?
Yeah. Do all the bottom together. Misery okay. Loves Company.
Okay. So Eastern Conference, second to last, I have Miami. I am significantly concerned about everything that they've got going on. They are potentially going to have to trade away Matias Pellegrini, who I would absolutely love to see on a couple of the teams that I pay attention to. But Pellegrini is supposed to be a key attacking player that they have. So then that he's the only relatively youthful legs outside of Rodolfo Pizarro that they have in the attack. Gonzalo Higuain is old. Pretty much going to be a get into space and try and score kind of guy. And then you have Robbie Robinson, an unproven right winger. I'm concerned about that setup. I have Miami second to last. And then I have Montreal dead last. I just don't, I don't know what I see in this team. None of it makes sense formationally. They just have a lot of players that go out and play soccer, and that's how it feels. And it seems like, that team is constantly, as a franchise, is constantly, just turning over things, coaches constantly, players constantly. And I know the Thierry Henry situation isn't the way it wanted to go. But I'm just not sold on this, Montreal team, at all this season. And in the Western Conference, I have Vancouver second to last. I just am still like Cavallini's a nice signing, but I'm not impressed by pretty much everything else. And then RSL, that is one of the weakest rosters I feel like in the entire Western Conference, if not the entire league. Hence RSL are my wooden spoon, winner this season. Supporters Shield, got LAFC taking Supporters Shield this year.
Rachel.
I do not have FC Cincinnati making the playoffs for a shocking third year. I would just like to put that on the record. I have in the Eastern Conference for the bottom two, I have New York Red Bulls. I still think it's a very interesting, weird, crazy change of what's the word I'm looking for? I totally just blank. It's just a lot of changes, and I think that it's still part of this rebuilding process, and it's going to take some time. It's not going to happen overnight. And then in 14th place, last place, I had the Montreal Impact here at first, but then just because they lost to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds in a preseason match, I am putting FC Cincinnati. Listen, I only say that because like the Riverhounds have like are so always late at signing people, and like half of their roster right now is trialists, and FC Cincinnati still lost. So, you know, they're my wooden spoon. So I went from picking them to make the playoffs for the last 2 years to now giving them the wooden spoon. In the Western Conference, I have Austin FC taking second to last. And then, I am putting the Houston Dynamo here in last place. I don't think they're the wooden spoon, but I don't think they are going to do much this year. So that's my stuff.
Your Supporters Shield winner, Rachel.
Oh, I'm sorry. My Supporters Shield winner is LAFC.
Okay. And then so in my Eastern Conference, second to last, I have FC Cincinnati for a lot of similar reasons that you guys had. I do think Brenner is a good pickup. First year Brazilian coming to Cincinnati during a pandemic, some culture shock, new language and everything. I think it will take him a year to get settled and actually achieve his potential. And then Lucho Acosta wasn't super great sans Wayne Rooney in his last couple of years with DC United. So I have questions about that acquisition kind of being the big number 10 and the big number 9 going together. So I have Cincinnati finishing second to last, and then I have Montreal for the same chaotic reasons that you mentioned, Dan. I think, you know, having a turnover head coach, albeit for completely understandable reasons, doesn't bode well for the actual start of the season. And then with them having to start in, you know, having to start playing in Florida, at the very least, Vancouver is going to be getting some strength at altitude playing at RSL. You know, and Toronto had it for a little bit of a better period as well. They seem to handle that better than Montreal did last season. I just think that's going to be it's going to be tumultuous for them. And I don't see how that group and that roster and a first year underqualified head coach in MLS, you know, make that work from a standpoint in the Eastern Conference. In the Western Conference, I have Houston Dynamo and RSL on that level. Dan, I echo your points. I think Bobby Wood is a retread and coming back for a soft landing spot, but I don't think he's going to significantly change the trajectory of their club. And I agree, this team's kind of in turmoil and in purgatory until they actually get a new ownership and see about the direction that they're actually going. So they're not going to sign anybody big to make changes from that standpoint. And I still think there's major losses with the departure of Kyle Beckerman in the midfield and the departure of Nick Raimondo in goal. And I still don't know who scores the goals other than Demir Krylach against the Colorado Rapids head-to-head. And then Houston, I just think they're in another rebuilding year. I think Todd Ramos is the right guy for the ship. I just think the kids need to figure it out. And unfortunately, that's going to require them taking their lumps. I have Montreal winning the Wooden Spoon for reasons that I previously said, and I already said this in the show, but I'll reiterate, I have Columbus Crew winning the Supporters Shield. With that, Dan, I will start with you. What is your MLS Cup matchup, and who's lifting the memorial Phil Anschutz, the Phil Anschutz? Who's lifting MLS Cup at the end of the year?
I think Sporting Kansas City lifts their third MLS Cup trophy this year. I think this team is primed to get better as the season goes. I think that you're looking at, Alan Police. I genuinely think that Sporting Kansas City probably could have been, in the, MLS Cup Championship and hosting the MLS Cup final last year if Alan Pulido had been healthy. If Alan Pulido's healthy, I think that team's going pretty stinking far. So I have Sporting Kansas City playing, Hotlanta in the 2018 MLS Cup that we should have had and probably would have been way better than watching Portland try and defense out a match against Atlanta. I think it would be a great final. I think it'd be a really fun final. Two very, very intense coaches and intense teams, and I think that would it would be a blast. So I've got Sporting Kansas City defeating Hotlanta in the MLS Cup this year.
Rachel.
Okay. I am going to start out by saying
chaos.
It's chaos. San Jose Earthquakes versus Hi Dan. versus Columbus Crew SC. I think Columbus wins their second in a row. Too many good players. Nobody really left that is going to hurt them. And if anybody's going to do a two-peat, I would love to see Columbus do it. But I am on the 1,010% hype train this year for everything Chris Wondolowski. So, but let's go. Let's see it happen. Matt, can you top the chaos?
I mean, the only, like, in terms of just, like, who I have making the playoffs, I think the only thing that could be, I guess this would be chaos in how they get there. I don't think the final would be particularly chaos. Would be, like, Nashville versus Colorado in the new worst MLS Cup final of all time, usurping the 2010 MLS Cup final. But in back here on planet Earth, where reality happens and gravity is present and the cream rises to the top come MLS Cup playoffs, for the most part, I have LAFC defeating Columbus Crew at the new Crew Stadium in the MLS Cup Battle of the Black and Golds. With that, let's head to our individual awards. We will do a rundown of each award, and then each of my co-hosts and myself will give our best 140 character reasonings behind their vote. Rachel, I will start with you with the Landon Donovan MLS Most Valuable Player.
So I said I had a lot of LAFC individual awards that didn't really have to do with Carlos Vela too much, so this one kind of kicks it off. I'm going to go with Diego Rossi, MLS MVP. I think he's going to have an even better season than he did in 2020.
Dan.
I'm going to go with Joseph Martinez, MVP.
I will go Joseph Martinez as well. So I've actually split up my vote, folks, based on what I would vote for and what I think the voters are actually going to vote for, because as we can attest to here, folks, there's narrative and spin and some biases that take place. So I would vote for Joseph Martinez. Spoiler alert, I have him winning the Golden Boot, but I think they'll go with Vela because he will be flashier on a team that finishes higher up in the standings. Rachel, Defender of the Year.
Defender of the Year, I'm going to go with Jonathan Mensah because the dude is just an absolute beast.
Dan?
I'm going to go with Miles Robinson. I think he takes the big step this year.
I will go with Jonathan Mensah as well, and I think that's what the voters will go for because Columbus Crew, Supporters Shield, and narrative. Rachel, Goalkeeper of the Year.
I think Goalkeeper of the Year last year was really tight. A lot of good picks, a lot of good choices. I think I'm going to go with Eloy Room. I think he's been amazing for Columbus since he got there. He filled in some really big shoes from Zach Steffen, so I'm going to go with Eloy Room.
Dan.
The man who should have been in the conversation last year, I think Dane St. Clair is a freak in goal. And Minnesota's got a really, really good goalkeeping prospect. As long as he doesn't get the yips, the Allison and Ederson type yips where they're flying out of the box for no reason, Brad Guzan style too. I think his shot stopping ability is some of the best twitchy reflexes in the league. So I'll take DSC as goalkeeper of the year.
I will take Matt Turner, and I think the voters will take Matt Turner purely as like retribution, apology, / makeup call for the closeness of last year's vote. Rachel, newcomer of the year.
Okay, so I haven't been too very much familiar with the transaction tracker. I think the storyline around him is chaos, and he'll probably be on a different team that isn't Inter Miami and want to take out frustration. So let's go with Matias Pellegrini. Why not?
Dan?
I'm going to take actually another Argentine, but this one is Tomas Pochettino. With Austin FC. I don't know if you've seen the free kick that he scored against the Houston Dynamo in preseason, but that thing was absolutely bonkers, curling it around the wall, like almost like Dwayne De Rosario-esque, just didn't have like that constant, like rising power that D-Ro had in that free kick against, LA. But the type of movement, the placement to the top bin, it was nuts. I think he's a really talented player. I'm excited to see him play, for Austin as he gets more comfortable in the league. I think he'll be a Zellerayan level player. Mark Albert.
Totally stole all of my talking points that I had on Poch there for Austin FC. I think he'll be one of their bright spots, Dan. And I think the only reason that they'll be in the hunt, as in like not completely out of the playoffs in the final month of the season, will be because of his play. And I also think he'll have more of like the flashier, just like the free kick goal that you're talking about. He'll make highlight reels. So even if Austin isn't doing well on the table, and even if his stats don't back it up, the flashiness of it will be, the shininess of him will be particularly attractive. And so he will win newcomer of the year. Rachel, Young Player of the Year, and I should point out, folks, Young Player of the Year is defined as 22 years old in this year, so born on or after January 1st, 1998.
I know it's basic, but I'm going to go with the first pick of the 2021 MLS Super Draft, Daniel Pereira from Austin FC.
Dan.
I'll take Bustio.
Okay. And then I was going to go with James Sands because I think, what I said previously about New York City FC barely missing the playoffs, I think he'll be one of the key standouts in one of their key, pain points that they'll be trying to address. So that's who I would vote for. I think Ezequiel Barco's stats will be improved based on the style of play and the tactics and how he's being played and the players around him. And I think that will be enough for voters to be like, oh yeah, Barco figured it out. And he was, worth a $15 million transfer fee. So clearly this is an indication of him being better rather than being in a better situation, but him himself not being too much improved from where he is lastly, because hashtag narrative and hashtag Atlanta bias. And then coach of the year, Rachel.
I'm going to go with Nashville SC's Gary Smith.
Dan.
I will take, I'll take Peter Vermees winning, shockingly, his first Coach of the Year award.
Caleb Porter because Columbus Crew Supporter Shield and narrative. Rachel, comeback. Okay, I'll preface this by saying Jose Martinez tore his ACL in the first game of the season last year, and he played one game. Speaking of forever, hold your peace. Is there any scenario where Jose Martinez does not win comeback player of the year?
No. Unless, like, Jordan Morris resurrects in the middle of the season. No.
Dan,
he'll be comeback player of the year next year.
Dan, anything you'd like to add to that?
Nope.
Okay, and with that, we'll go to Golden Boot. Rachel, who's getting the most goals this year?
Diego Rossi. You're welcome, Trevor Tracy.
Dan?
I think I'm going to go with Pulido, actually. I think Pulido's going to bag a crap ton of goals. I just don't know if he will have the overall impact that will lead to a DP or a DP, an MVP type season because narratives.
Jose Martinez, because reasons that I have previously said. Okay, that does it for us, folks. Rachel, Dan, anything else that we want to say about previewing this 2021 Major League Soccer season? Or shall we head to last words?
Last words sounds fine.
Rachel, where can people find you on Twitter? Anything you want to say?
You can find me tweeting pictures of our 2-0 soccer team at Rachel Kruger. Two A's in my name, not just one. I really don't have many last words. Just keep supporting the NWSL. A lot of midweek games this week. I think there's one on Wednesday, two on Thursday, one on Friday. So it's a busy week coming up in the league. Got a shout out, Racing Louisville for a couple different things. Number one, their fan experience was absolutely incredible from what I understand. I have a friend who is the president of the Lavender Legion, and she just, you know, rave reviews and everything I saw on social media, the light show whenever Brooke Hendricks scored the equalizing goal. Was really cool. And then also they made it extremely hospitable for players, especially players with kids. Sydney LaRue had and Shayna Matthews had tweeted and put on Instagram after the game that you know, it was like raining on and off in Louisville all last night, and they said they had a nice, dry, safe place for families and for the kids. Of course, you know, everybody knows Sydney LaRue's two kids from her social media presence. So just an all around great job from Racing Louisville. A lot to build off of from them. They looked really, really good. And congrats to CeCe Kaiser for scoring the first goal in club history. So lots of good stuff happening for that group.
Dan, where can people find you on Twitter? Tell our dear listeners about Icarus FC, and do you have any last words?
Well, folks, I just have to ask. I always ask this. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do it this way. But if you're tired of same old uniforms, cookie-cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, or you're looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. With the motto, any design you want, seriously, let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Last words. So I'm really stoked. I am getting on opening day of Major League Soccer, I get my second vaccine, and I know I'm going to be down for the count and miserable, because when I'm actually sick, I am a pathetic blob that just lays on the couch or the bed, and moans in my grumpiness and pain. So I'm excited to do that while watching soccer for the entirety of it. So get vaccinated, watch some great soccer this weekend. I am so freaking stoked for the start of Major League Soccer. It's been a long time coming, way too long of an off season, and I'm finally glad it is over.
Okay, so listeners, if you weren't paying attention to, I guess this would have been Du Bois Instagram live or story, whichever one that it was. Okay, Sebastian Legette put out a video that was he and his other LA Galaxy teammates walking off the field from training. They're still in Tucson, Arizona, to my knowledge. And a couple of the players were goofing around with Julian Araujo, should be pointed out, American international of Mexican descent. And Du Bois was heard in the background holding his phone and pointing it in front of him at Araujo, kind of playing a prank on him, touching the back of his neck when he wasn't expecting it, and then saying the P word. And it was said, I should point out, it wasn't said in a tone that was particularly malicious. Sebastian Legette is Argentine. I'm not saying that makes it any better than what he was saying previously, than, you know, other than had a white player said it. But certainly this is a word that has increasingly become weaponized in North American soccer, a word that has become unacceptable, that, you know, regularly you will see fans point out that they hear it on the TV, they hear it in the stadium, and what's the club or the league or the federation or CONCACAF going to do about that in the case of international play? And ultimately, this is a word, along with a lot of other abuse, that Mike Petke used in, while head coach of Real Salt Lake at the first League's Cup, that ultimately he weaponized the P word, and resigned in part from that and irreconcilable differences, with the Real Salt Lake front office and ownership at that time. So I don't know the context of this particularly situation. Legette did immediately delete it. He immediately then gave a comment, and the LA Galaxy and MLS have put out comments saying that, you know, this isn't acceptable. This is not behavior. Even though it was potentially said in a joking manner, this is serious. Even though it might have said where, you know, Legette could have said any other word in English or Spanish, and as long as it wasn't another swear word, just the tone of it and the tenor of it would not have brought about immediately thoughts that it was said maliciously or said with a negative or derogatory tone, or, you know, any of the implications of the P word saying that at Julian Araujo about his profession or sexual orientation. You know, this is something that is increasingly not acceptable. And we've obviously seen in recent weeks in Europe situations of racism and racist conduct. And, you know, there was an incident with the Valencia players and they walked off the field and then they came back a little bit after reportedly they were told that they'd have to forfeit the game. You know, that the federation and the club weren't going to back them up and, you know, that kind of thing in a he said, she said situation around racism. This place, that word and the spirit of it and the implications of it have no place in American soccer, have no place in Major League Soccer. I look forward to hearing whatever press release and whatever media availability that they have with the LA Galaxy and with Sebastian Legette about how this has been dealt with internally. Sebastian's and Du Bois's understanding of the ramifications of what he said and what is being done to ensure that Seba knows about that and that this will not be done again, because this stuff has to stop. And I'm just continuously shocked, whether it was the San Diego Loyal in back-to-back games last year, that this is still something that we have to talk about. So to any MLS players who are listening to this, you know, guys, if you have a choice between like jokingly saying a word that might be taken out of context or has been known to have racial undertones, and you have the option to say any other word that is not one of those words, take the other option. It will be better for you in the long run. It will be better for our culture, and you will not be normalizing something that we should have stamped out 2 to 3 years ago. I want to thank our other sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, who are an official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. They are also making cloth masks with the loops that go around your ears, and some of them have the Velcro on the back. They are also making summery scarves that are lighter and less thick and have a different material, so you're not sweating on your neck when, Dan, you're sitting at a game in the sun at Sporting Kansas City, and it's 90% humidity and 85 degrees outside at 5 p.m. on a Saturday. So they have that available, and they are also making neck gaiters for those of us who are still dealing with winter or who want to cover your face, your neck, and your ears from that sun thing that's about to come out for a significant portion of your country. So get your custom all of that for your group, team, or office at roughneckscarves.com. Listeners, follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard, lastword on sports.com/soccer, and at lastwordsc on all of the socials. Listeners, we will see you next week to talk about CCL and the opening weekend of MLS 2021.